two carried-over bills that we are not going to move today. One of them is Senate Bill 732, and the other one is Senate Bill 280. There will be no action on those bills today, so if anybody's here with them and wants to go someplace else, you'll be safe. So we will now open a work session on Senate Bill 347, Council.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee.
Senate Bill 347 was originally before the committee on April the 24th. It provides that certain information relating to test instruments in DUIs is not discoverable or admissible in criminal trials. I'll be talking about the Dash 1 amendments that you have before you, hopefully in the packet here. In driving under the influence of intoxicants or DUI prosecutions, the state often relies on evidence gleaned from certain test instruments that measure the amount of alcohol within a person's breath, and then extrapolates from that the amount of alcohol that would be in the person's blood, otherwise known as blood alcohol content, or BAC. Oregon recently switched to machines known as the Intoxilizer 8000, which replaced the previous 5000. Blood and urine are typically extracted and analyzed through different processes and mechanisms. In DUI prosecutions, defense attorneys will often request, as part of discovery, that the state turn over any and all information relating to the particular instrument that was used to test a defendant's BAC. Such information can include the crime lab's maintenance records for the machine, etc. Senate Bill 347 clarifies that certain information relating to these test instruments is not discoverable or admissible. Specifically, this information includes, and I'm going to address what the Dash 1 amendments do rather than the original bill. Under the Dash 1 amendments, the following is not discoverable or admissible. First of all, the source code or other software for the test instrument. That's consistent with the original bill. Secondly, is schematics, trade secrets, or other proprietary information regarding the test instrument. And that's a narrowing of language from the original bill, which referred to manuals or schematics. And then finally, any other documents or information relating to the test instrument that is not in the possession of the law enforcement agency administering the test. That last part about not in the possession of the law enforcement agency administering the test is also a change. The Dash 1 amendments have narrowed it to that rather than what was in the existing bill.
Okay. Senator Pruszynski, is there any further comment you want to make? Thank you for doing the Dash 1 amendment and getting that narrowing language in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there's a couple of things I'd like to put on the record. One is that I want to make certain that the final bill, as it moves forward, is one that's not going to take away a defendant's right to actually get discoverable information regarding the test itself, how the results are. Specifically, what we're attempting to do is make certain that that the case would not get hung up or thrown out based on requesting trade secrets, schematics, or source data, stuff that's within the proprietariness of the manufacturer of the machine. I've told Ann Christensen that I'm more than willing to continue to work with them if they want to try to tighten it down some more, and she understands the position we're in, so that we would not, let's say, interfere with the right for confrontation or due process to a defendant. But clearly these areas that we're talking about that we're trying to narrow and make clear that they are not discoverable are ones that are basically tied to the manufacturer of the machine and does not have any resemblance of any type of argument that I believe could be made as to the test or the results of the test itself. And so with that understanding, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to get the Dash 1s done. I do believe, based on our conversation here in our group, that the committee didn't want to have it more narrowed. I believe we've done this. I know that defense counsel has just received the amendments, and as I put on the record, I'm more than willing to continue to work with them on the House side if they feel that they could be better written and, let's say, more narrow than what we're intending to do here.
Thank you, Senator Pruszynski. This is definitely a narrowing, and I certainly have a much higher comfort level with this, so I appreciate your efforts, especially on very short notice. Is there any other discussion?
The other thing that should be noted for the record, at Senator Byers' request, and suggestion, I should say, we do have an emergency clause that will be part of the Dash 1s.
Another law improvement by Senator Byer. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. Senator Byer.
Madam Chair, with the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 347.
Senator Byer has moved the Dash 1 amendment into Senate Bill 347. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Byer.
Madam Chair,
Chair, I move Senate Bill 347 as amended to the floor with a due draft recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved Senate Bill 347 as amended to the Senate floor with a due draft recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. You may carry your bill, Senator Prozanski.
Thank you.
Okay, now we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 536 and its appendages. Council.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. Senate Bill 536, again, was before the committee on April 24th. It relates to driving under the influence of intoxicants. I'll talk about the bill, and then we're going to be talking about the Dash 2 amendments. The Dash 2 amendments keep the same premise as what the underlying bill 536 did, but then adds Senate Bill 810, which was discussed by John Bradley and others from Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, and with some Ms. Alconich, I believe, weighed in on that one as well. So we'll be talking about both. They're all combined in Senate Bill 536. ORS 813.010 establishes the elements for DUI law in Oregon. Most DUIs are Class A misdemeanors. If eligible, persons may participate in what's known as a DUI diversion program that, if successfully completed, enables the person to avoid a conviction. ORS 813.525 discusses the eligibility for this diversion program. In part, ineligible persons include those who have a DUI or a diversion in the 10 years prior, and those whose DUI incidents involved injury or death to another person. Such people would be ineligible for the diversion program. Senate Bill 536 adds a new condition that makes a defendant ineligible for diversion. If the defendant has a previous felony DUI conviction in Oregon or its statutory counterpart to Oregon's statutory counterpart to felony DUI in another state. For a DUI to rise to the felony level in Oregon, ORS 813.010 sub 5 requires that the person have 3 prior DUI convictions in Oregon or their statutory counterpart in another jurisdiction within 10 years prior to the date of the current offense. So one thing that 536 does, if you have any sort of felony DUI, you are not eligible for diversion. In addition, Senate Bill 536 also relates to this issue of what constitutes a statutory counterpart in other jurisdictions. The issue, put simply, is that while all states have DUI laws, in some cases those laws are considered to be insufficiently similar to Oregon's, such that a DUI in the other state does not count against a defendant in Oregon. Interpretation of this provision and this requirement has led to some judges refusing to count DUI convictions in Washington or California in Oregon in determining a person's prior DUIs. Senate Bill 810 addresses this issue by supplementing the statutory counterpart language with, in relevant part, language that refers to, quote, a driving offense in another jurisdiction that involves the impaired driving of a vehicle, an aircraft, or a boat due to the use of intoxicating liquor, a controlled substance, an inhalant, or any combination thereof, close quote, or a different option, quote, a driving offense in another jurisdiction that involves operating a vehicle, an aircraft, or a boat while having a blood alcohol content above that jurisdiction's permissible blood alcohol content, close quote. The language that I've just referred to is meant to, statutory counterpart is one way to get there. This is additional language besides an additional option that's more clear than what statutory counterpart would be. There is a specific exception within Senate Bill 536 for states that have DUI laws that allow for DUI convictions for underage persons at what would be considered very low blood alcohol content levels. For example, I believe Idaho has a statute that's 0.03. If you're underage, 0.03 or greater, and you're automatically DUI. Such convictions would not count in Oregon. They're specifically accepted.
Okay, so the Dash 1 was before Senate Bill 810 was wrapped into it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so basically, committee, we have two related bills in the same bill, and they're both good bills in my humble view, but I would be happy to have discussion, either agreeing or disagreeing.
Or not.
Senator Prozanski.
On the Dash 2s, this does, in fact, let's say the first part of that reflects what I had understood that my one of my constituents or co-prosecutors wanted, and that's basically to make an individual who has been convicted of a felony or its statutory counterpart from any other state from ever being able to get into a diversion program. So I'm very comfortable with that, and I think the second part is counsel has put on the record. We really do need to make certain that the courts are following through what we intended, and clearly what we intended that if an individual has been convicted in another state of what they would call DUI, DUI, DWI, whatever they refer to it as, that would be a point or a conviction that's against the individual as it pertains to them as to how our counting would be for felony treatment of a DUI, as well as, in this case, a diversion.
Thank you, Senator Pazansky. Any other discussion?
Okay. Madam Chair.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you. I'm looking on the bottom of page 2 on the dash 2 amendments, the new language there, and I guess I need an explanation. It says driving under the influence of toxins is a Class C felony if the current offense was committed in a motor vehicle and the defendant has been convicted at any time prior to the commission of the current offense to a felony driving while under the influence. So what that's saying is that once a person gets a felony DUI, any other DUI at any other time for the rest of their life will be another felony DUI.
Counsel?
Senator Beyer, I'm going to need a second to take a look at this. We were just given these not long ago.
Senator Pazansky, you see what he's
looking at there?
Yeah,
I'm reading through it myself.
Maybe if it's after a certain number of DUIs, then it becomes a felony for subsequent ones. Maybe that's what this is.
Madam Chair, I believe, and hopefully someone correct me if I'm wrong, but under criminal law, if you get 3 in a 10-year period, the fourth is a felony.
Mm-hmm. All right. Correct.
But if you then wait another 10 years, the clock starts over. Or
Under current law,
that if you go 10 years and then get a DUI, you could then go back and you start the clock over as just violations.
Mm-hmm.
Under this change, it would be that at any point in time in your life after that, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, another DUI is a felony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it says at any time prior to the commission of the current offense, at any time. So that means,
yes,
from birth to whenever.
Well, wait a second. No, if any time prior they had a felony.
Yeah. So once they get a felony DUI, the rest of them for the rest of their lives they're all felony DUIs.
Right. But by the time they have a felony DUI, they've had 4.
I understand that. I just want to make sure that's what this is saying. So again, this isn't saying that as the current bill was. This is basically the same language that's in current Bill 536.
Senator Beyer, that's correct. I'm looking at it. If you look at, go up to page 2, line 4.
Of the original bill?
Of the dash 2.
Okay.
I'm looking at the dash 2. And what we're talking about here is in subsection 5. Previously, we're looking at 813.010, 1, 2, 3, and 4 is all talking about misdemeanor DUIs and how you prove it, et cetera. And then you get to subsection 5, which is starting on line 4 on page 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it says DUI is a Class C felony rather than a Class A misdemeanor if, and then what it talks about there is the 3 times in the 10 years prior. That's little a. And I think that's, little a carries you all the way down to line 26.
Right.
And that's talking about what we know, 10 years prior, 3 DUIs. And then little b is indeed, it's a besides the 3 in the prior 10 years, little b says it's also a felony if the current offense was committed in a motor vehicle and the defendant has been convicted at any time prior to the commission of the current offense, a felony driving while under the influence of intoxicants in violation of this section, or the statutory counterparts of this section in another jurisdiction.
With the exception or limitation for the number C.
Yeah. Right.
For both A and B.
What's worded, what I'm thinking out loud about understanding is on page 3, line 2, what does that mean? In order to be guilty of felony Dewey under this section, doesn't that require the three priors? I'm not sure if my question made sense.
Yeah,
it's saying driving. I'm reading again from page 2, starting at line 27. This is an alternate way for it to be felony Dewey in Oregon. Driving while under the influence is a Class C felony if the current offense was committed in a motor vehicle and the defendant has been convicted at any time prior to the commission of the current offense of felony Dewey in violation of A, this section. Well, the only way to be in violation of felony Dewey according in this section is your three priors.
No, or the new B was any previous felony conviction.
Yeah, no, but the B, what counsel is reading is on page 3, lines 2, which...
Yeah, I know where you're reading, but I'm just trying to figure out how that works together.
It's kind of circular, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a good way to put it. It is very circular.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what they're trying to say, but I don't think it says that.
Well, I don't know. Why do you know what they're trying to say? That's the question. Are you trying
I know what they're trying to say.
I mean, the question is, are you trying to say that, in plain language, once you get a Dewey, every other DUI is a Dewey? I mean, once you get a felony, mm-hmm. every other DUI is a felony. Or are you trying to say that once you get a felony, you can no longer go to diversion? If you get another one. If you wait 10 years, you're no longer eligible for diversion. Those are two different things. And I'm trying to figure out what this bill does.
Right. You know what? What this says, I think this keeps current law. I think this says if you go between, if you go 10 years after your felony, in other words, you get three, you get a felony, and then you go 10 years, you get another one, I think it's a misdemeanor. Because it says in violation of this section mm-hmm. or the statutory counterpart to this section, and this section sets up the structure for felony Dewey.
Can we get LC up here to talk about this?
Then the bill doesn't do anything in that part, in that aspect.
It brings in the other jurisdiction.
It brings in the other jurisdiction,
yes.
But it doesn't do anything to speaking to no longer eligible for a diversion if you've ever had a felony conviction, which was the intent of the original bill, I thought.
I keep hearing mumblings out there.
We see some people shaking their head, yes, some people shaking their head, no.
It's clear.
Ms. Altmaier is the drafter on this. If we want to have her come up, Heidi Altmaier.
Yeah.
Let's get Heidi Altmaier. Does the world hear me down there in LC? Midge, please send Heidi.
A totally irrelevant question,
Jennifer.
Probably. But, you know, my question is, you get back to line 6 on page 2 where it says at least three times. Does that mean it's discretionary? That why would it say at least rather than just three times?
If I can answer that question, Senator Cruz, because if... I will guarantee you there are many defense attorneys out there who would say, my guy hasn't been convicted three times, my guy's been convicted five times. Not a felony.
At least.
We would face that argument.
There is discretion.
No.
No.
No, it says at least three times, so someone can't come in and say, my guy hasn't been convicted three times, he's actually been convicted five times.
Okay.
This is
what
saying, three or more.
Yeah. Okay.
Three or more.
Well, you're kind of outsmart.
Yeah, but then the question would be, how would they get to that point?
True.
How would they get to four or five?
Drink a lot and get caught driving a car under.
Well, I understand, but how would you get to four or five? How would you get to four as a misdemeanor?
And if Senator Burdick, if I may, again, there are two issues that you've raised. The one is this bill saying if you've ever had a felony Dewey, then you are not and that's one issue. And then the other one is if you've ever had a felony Dewey, then all the rest of your Deweys also felonies. And The first one was the intent of the bill originally, as articulated by Senator Przanski.
It was to prohibit them from having
diversion. No diversion.
Right.
Felony Dewey ever, I don't care when, 20 years ago, no diversion for you. And then the second one was what was drafted in the original bill, but my understanding is that was not the intent of the drafters.
Okay, show me where the diversion, does this accomplish the diversion piece? Show me where it accomplishes that.
It's,
I think that's on page 4, isn't it?
Oh, I missed one.
Right, that's Senator Burdick, that's section 4. And it is, I believe it is accomplished. The defendant is eligible for diversion if...
Where are you?
I'm on page 4.
Six. Line 17.
You're on page 6.
I can't read
seven.
Page 6.
Section 4.
Section 4,
okay,
thank you.
Got it, okay. Got it. Okay. So it does that. And I think, having read it like 9,000 times, that it keeps the status quo. But we'll hear that or something else from Heidi when she gets here. Okay. Is there any discussion while we're waiting for her on the Senate Bill 810 part of this thing?
The Senate Bill 810 part would be the language describing a driving an offense in another jurisdiction that involves the impaired use, blah, 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 et cetera.
Last page.
It's page 9, line 24.
In a lot of places.
It's actually worked throughout.
It is throughout.
Page 11. That's what part of this first section is.
Page 10. Actually, it's on virtually every page, I think.
Yeah.
Have we been able to determine to use someone convicted of drunk driving under the age of 21 prior to this bill? Because this is all bold language.
Say it again.
This bill says throughout that you cannot consider a conviction from under the age of 21 to be factored into this prohibition.
Senator Walker, I can address that issue. What it's saying is that Oregon, different states have handled the situation of underage drinking drivers differently. Oregon says, you know, it's the same standard. Even though you're committing an additional offense because you're an underage drinker, you still got to be 0.08 or above or under the influence to a noticeable or perceptible degree. Same standard for adults as what it is for kids. That's Oregon law.
Okay.
Some states have decided, including Idaho, that if you are under the age of 21, 03 is enough. So in Idaho, if I'm 19 and I am stopped and I blow an 03, I am automatically guilty of Dewey.
In Idaho.
And so what Oregon is saying, what this provision is meant to address, is to say when we're calculating a defendant's prior convictions, if one of the defendant's prior convictions was an out-of-state Dewey that was underage and that state has one of these lower, that doesn't count.
So if they had a 0.08 or higher, we would count it.
It does say that. That is low. I was trying to figure out what the heck that meant. Okay.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yes. And there's a court case directly on point on that
okay.
as well.
Is Idaho the only state that has a 0.03?
No. I think there's some others.
Right. Jeez. There are others that do lower for minors or for underage persons.
I see. So anyone over 21, it's a higher level, but in Idaho it's under. Right. Oh.
And also one thing, if, let's say there was a 17-year-old or a 19-year-old in Idaho who blew a .09, they'd be prosecuted under the regular Dewey statute, not under the lower for a minor.
Okay. Got it.
Our witness is here. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. Heidi Altmaier, Legislative Council.
I know you've been, Madam Chair, you've been stuck down in LC for a long time, but it is now afternoon, Heidi. It has now
morning.
Been moved into the afternoon.
You've been spending too much time in House Judiciary, I can tell. Okay, here's the question. On page 2 of the Dash 2 amendment.
I actually do not have.
Oh, you don't have it?
I got a copy right here.
Somebody has an extra copy.
There's someplace.
On page 2, line 27 of the Dash 2 amendment,
yes.
We want to know whether the person who, whether this would keep current law. In other words, if you have three felonies in a 10-year period, then your next one, if you have three DUIs in a 10-year period, your next one is a felony. We want to find out whether this keeps current law or whether it changes to once you've had a felony, then no matter when you get another DUI, it's a felony, even if it's 30 years later.
Okay. Just let me brief moment to look this over.
Okay.
It would change current law so that if a person had been been convicted of a felony, their next conviction would also be a felony, so that you wouldn't have to have the three prior convictions to make the next.
Madam
That's
Chair.
Correct, but supposing 10 years go by and no DUIs, what happens?
There's no 10-year.
You need to look at page 3, though, because the issue, when you look at page 3 of the dash 2s, on line 2, it makes reference to this section, and we were stumbling as to if this section, you go back up to back on page 2, starting line 4, sets up when someone would be convicted under that section for a felony. So it almost seems like it does a complete circle.
Mm-hmm.
It would accept that. Line 4 is 5A.
Right.
So that's
and this refers
that's isolated to itself.
Well,
and
but then sub B refers back to this section. So
the section being
it's not subsection.
Not subsection, but 813.010, the entire section.
Well, but when you say this section, in the purpose of a bill, it's section 1, and section 1 includes that language on line 4 of page 2. So we're just trying to figure out what you meant here. Let me give you, for instance, someone gets a felony DUI and 20 years go by and they get arrested again with a .08. Is that a felony, or do they go back because it hasn't occurred in the 10-year period?
So if a person, can you give me the example again? The person in
person has a felony DUI in 1970.
Yes.
And then in 1990, then nothing happens for 20 years. And in 1990, they get pulled over with a .08. Is that a violation or a felony? A misdemeanor or a felony?
Okay. It would probably depend on if that was felony happened in Oregon or happened out.
Not under this bill. Under this bill, the other states count.
Okay.
Well, ma'am, let's assume Oregon. Let's assume they had a felony conviction in Oregon in 1970, and they get pulled over at .08 in 1990. Is that a misdemeanor or a felony?
Or it would start over again.
According to this bill.
Yeah.
That's the answer.
They start
question.
Over again.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, then I have another question. What does sub B starting on line 27 ending up on page 2 ending up on line 1 of page 3 what does that do?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
What does sub B in the dash 2 amendments starting in the bottom line 27 page 2 and ending up on line 4 page 3 what does that sub B do?
That sub allows for someone who has a felony, maybe possibly from another jurisdiction, who comes in and commits their first offense in Oregon,
right,
instead of having three times.
So, yeah, Madam Chair,
they've already had a prior felony.
Hearing it that way, I think that's a great way to ask it, because it seems to me that it's saying it's going to be a felony if it falls under this section, which takes us back up to how you get a felony under 5A. Or the counterpart from another state. And so it seems like it's, even though it seems to be confusing, it's trying to clarify that
okay.
It would be a felony so long as they meet the criteria that we have for our state or its statutory counterpart in the other state.
So everything that's mentioned aside from the statutory counterpart language is existing law. Is that correct?
Herbier, correct.
Okay.
Turn over.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Not on that specific issue, but I do have another question then on when we got talking about the other states' lower Dewey convictions for under 21. What about the case of, in this state, a truck driver? It's anyone with a commercial driver's license, they have a .04 standard.
Right.
Is that considered a...
We actually tried to fix that. That's how do I want to say that? That is, are you talking about for the felony conviction?
Well, yeah. When you start talking about a felony, what if you got a person who has a commercial driver's license, and that person would get convicted at a .04, not only if they're driving the truck, but if they're driving their automobile.
Right. We were actually trying to change it where if you were not driving commercially at the time you got the Dewey, that you'd be eligible for diversion, which you currently aren't. My understanding is that's controlled by federal law, and I'm assuming if, and maybe counsel or one of the counsels can tell us, commercial.
Federal law does prohibit someone with a commercial driver's license from entering into diversion in order to reinstate their license. They don't get that same privilege that just an ordinary citizen does to get their commercial driver license back.
Counsel, do you know whether or not under that federal provision, if every state has the same requirement that of a .04 for commercial driver's license, is that a national standard?
Chair Burdick, Senator Poznanski, I'm not sure.
Senator Poznanski, I believe that it is.
Yeah.
And basis for my opinion is a nodding head out there that would know, Ms. Ryerson.
Yeah. And so it's all standard. It's, every state has to treat commercial driver's license holders the same, even though they're not in a commercial or driving commercially at the time they get the Dewey. They're in their personal car on the weekend. They're still going to be held to that same standard, and that's everywhere in the country.
But for that purposes of that, that .04 conviction could count against their one of their three or four.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Isn't
that correct?
Well, that's you're talking about juveniles, though.
I'm not talking about juveniles. I'm just talking about holder of a commercial driver's license, not a juvenile, gets convicted of a .04, and let's say that is one of their mm-hmm. convictions. Would that .04 count towards the felony to get them over the felony threshold?
I'd argue that.
Senator Beyer, I think it might be useful, Mr. Ryerson.
Somebody back should really get here and tell us.
Come on up. You look like you're studying. Well, but they're not excluded, so it would be assumed that they'd be covered because it's Dewey.
Senator Burdick, Dina Ryerson with the Department of Justice. I'm the DUI resource prosecutor for Oregon. I'm trying to look for the statute here, but no, if the 04 standard is only for driver's license suspension, not for the standard of being convicted for DUI. Everyone gets the same standard, the 08 or under the influence of controlled substance. And I can find the statute for you in just under 1 second.
So it's not a criminal matter if it's .04?
Right. If you look at section, 813.410, that deals with implied consent law, and that's the whole and then suspensions under implied consent law. And if you were to look at section 2, I believe, it talks about the .04 standard. So for purposes of suspending someone's license, they go under .04, but for purposes of DUI, it has to be an 08 standard.
Okay.
Good question. I never knew that, Senator Meyer.
So while we have our learned counsel here.
Learned counsel, another question.
So that means that for someone with a commercial driver's license, one, they're prohibited from going into diversion if they are .04 or greater. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. And then that .04, the only other time that it comes into play would be for suspension, not for the underlying conviction of DUI.
I'm sorry. Let me take that back. If they get a DUI, it's under the assumption they're getting a DUI because they had a .08. So I'm sorry. I'm correcting myself. from your question, what I understand it to mean is their license is suspended on the DMV side if it's a .04, and that never hits the courts. That's not a criminal, as you were saying, Senator Berg. That's not a criminal issue. That's all Department of Motor Vehicles.
So if they get a .08, can they go into diversion?
No, because they hold a commercial driver's license. But that has nothing to do with the fact with .04 because... Mm-hmm. Unless the officer or DA can articulate that they were impaired at a .04, it's not for purposes of the criminal statute.
So even if they get a .08 when they're driving their own car and not driving a truck, they still can't go to diversion.
Right. And that's all federal. That's not.
So the bottom line is, if you don't drive commercially, get rid of that little section on your driver's license. Yeah. Because, I mean, that's actually individuals who used to drive commercially. They just kept it, just like some people have a motorcycle endorsement, mm-hmm. and that's just an endorsement, and then they find out that they're held to that different standard.
We learned so much in Senate Judiciary. Okay, thank you. Any other questions while we have both of our learned counsel up there? Thank you very much, both of you, for coming. Okay, whew. I think we know what we're voting on now. So, Senator Beyer, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move the -2 amendments in the Senate Bill 536.
Senator Beyer has moved the -2 amendments into Senate Bill 536. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 536 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved 536 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer, since you've caused all this trouble, unless Senator Pazanski wants to wrench this out of your cold dead hand.
Unless, I mean, we could do it together.
It's just a wrench out of your cold dead hand.
Questions here, not on the floor.
But feel free to ask the questions on the floor. Anyway, committee, we are done with our Senate agenda, and I want to compliment all of you for really sticking with it here. I think we've had a good first half of our session, and the second half, which is one-fourth.
We better be more than half.
The second half, which is one-fourth as long, is upon us. We will start out, Bill. So thanks again. We are adjourned.
Actually, we've got till...